Hey, it's John Harris, and I just got my True Diagnostics True Age test results, and boy, was I surprised. I found out my biological age is 0.36% of a year younger than my actual age. This is good because if my biological age were 5 years more than my true age, my risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease could jump by as much as 30 to 50%. Here's a kicker. 90% of aging is in my control through lifestyle and habits. It was so easy. A quick at-home finger prick, send it off, and in 2 to 3 weeks, I got a detailed report. The test showed that my heart and lungs are in good shape, but I could use some extra support for my immune system. It gave me tailored clips from Harvard and Yale scientists, like tweaking my diet and sleep, to slow aging and cut risks. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code Harris to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use HARRIS at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Welcome once again to the American Churchman podcast. I am your host, John Harris. We aim to encourage you as a churchman, probably in the United States, but you might be also listening in other places, to glorify God in your family, in your community, and of course, in your church. And with us today, we have a special guest. Matthew Pearson is not here, but in his stead, we have Pastor Jerry Doris, who is the pastor of Reformation Church in Shelbyville, Kentucky. It is a confessionally Baptist church. I have spoken there, and he co-hosts the Snake on the Table podcast with Tanner Cartwright. Some of you might have heard that. If you live in the area, please check them out, and thank you for being with us, Pastor Doris.
I'm glad to be here, brother. I'm excited.
Me too. Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit today about anon accounts, but also just more broadly speaking, online etiquette, which is something that I feel a little bit, I don't want to say not prepared for it, but just like it's something that's so new that we haven't really figured out what this is yet. And so I'm looking forward to hearing some of your thoughts. But maybe just tell everyone a little bit about yourself, because you wrote an article for TruthScript about this. It obviously is an interest for you. It's called, actually, I just had the article pulled up and now it's gone. So hold on. I think it's Appeal to the Man Beneath the Armor. I think that's the title of it.
Yeah.
All right. So I got it up again. And the first line is that you have 4 anon accounts. So maybe some explanation there would be good for everyone to hear. Why do you feel the need to pseudonymously interact online?
Yeah, so I have had an anon account for a very long time, and ever since I was a missionary in Turkey, and that was for security reasons, because we were in a restricted access country doing missions work and stuff. And so it kind of started in fun and in play to do some, do stuff like that with sending correspondence back and forth to the States about what we were doing and stuff like that. And it's just something that kind of stuck with me. And I use my anon accounts specifically for righteous reconnaissance, as it were. So I belong to a number of groups that it helps me to stay informed about different topics. So I can name them because they'll never be able to find me. But I'm in several LGBT groups. I'm in several Wiccan or Christian, Christo-pagan groups and stuff like that, just to kind of do research on the whole topic. We as a church have been pretty vocal on those two fronts in Kentucky, and needing to be a part of those groups has been helpful for us to just kind of know what's going on, you know, when an event is going to be happening and how they're reacting to us. Often you'll hear some of those kind of things. And so we have learned a lot from doing that. Yeah. Is there anything more you'd want to hear about me, or? You seem frozen to me, so I'll just keep talking. Maybe you'll come up here. So yeah, my anon accounts are pretty clever, and but they're for reconnaissance. They're not pushing content. I'm not interacting. There's been a couple of times where I've said something just as an encouragement to continue the conversation, but I haven't had, now I'm not trying to, there's not an agenda that I'm pushing with anything, especially the kind of stuff that we've seen here recently with others. John, I'm not sure what's happened here. We've lost you. So it still says that I'm live here. I can just keep talking about this particular topic. It's one that, with the thing that just happened with Josh Bice, you're concerned about how somebody can get to that particular place. I think it's being honest with who you are as a person. So I've just continued to talk, brother. I had a couple little pauses. I don't know what happened to you there.
Wow. You are a master at this then. That's never happened to me that I can recall on a podcast. I just started hearing really loud noises through my headphones. You paused. Okay. And I thought, man, he just said he was infiltrating these LGBT groups and they just shut him down. So that must have been on my end. I hope this doesn't happen again. But I heard, I think, most of what you were saying there about the reason for having these accounts, which I appreciate you sharing. And it seems like there are some valid reasons then. Are there other reasons that you can see, or maybe people in your church would have an anonymous account?
For security reasons. I mean, I know several Anon people, and they have jobs that they would be in jeopardy if their opinions were known. They would be in jeopardy. And so that's the I would say the primary reason. And so whoever their employer is, if they knew the content or the thing, especially in our DEI culture that, seems to have kind of gone away, and I've gotten some really good intel on how that stuff's gone away. We have a buddy in one of our members works in Toyota, and he says that just in the last few months, DEI has just evaporated. Now, he's not one of the Anons, but those kind of things are happening. I don't know, man. Maybe you've got some sort of an EMT has gone off in your area, and you've lost all your internet coverage or whatever. And that, now I'm the host of the American Church, man. It's exactly what it looks like. So obviously protecting your family, protecting your income is important. And so people that have an opinion or want to contribute or communicate something in the modern context, they're going to want to have some way to do that without, jeopardizing their income or jeopardizing that. I would argue that you don't want to stay in that position. You want to get yourself into a place where you're, you can match those two worlds. Who you are putting forward as who you are is truly who you are, and you don't fear the repercussions. So Tanner and myself, we're in that position. We have jobs, and we have, the security that we have, that we don't have to have to worry about any of those kind of things, because I can say what I want to say and my congregation is not going to fire me. You may have pastors that have opinions and they can't put those opinions out because they're in fear of their congregation. So I can see that, the necessity of that, but I don't think that's an ideal place to be at all for an Anon, to be duplicitous, I guess it were. And so these people that are in different businesses where DEI would be an issue, it's just that they're trying to protect their income. Somebody who is duplicitous and having opinions that differ from their online, that's a problem, because now it gets into an issue of integrity. And I think we need to have integrity for this particular, this arena. John is texting me, telling me that he's going to log in with his phone here. And so hopefully we'll have him back any moment. I'm trying to think that there's other reasons that are good. I mean, obviously, if you have malicious intent with your Anon account, that's problematic, because that's antithetical to being a believer, because we shouldn't have those types of thoughts. We should be forthright. We should let the word of God land. We shouldn't be trying to tear people down or any of those kind of things. it would be my primary argument, and something that I brought out in this article that I've got up on the board here is that, and the whole thrust of that is to be the man that you're putting forward, you know, should match. Even if you have an Anon account, you still should have your speech, you know, peppered with grace. It should be salt and light, and salt and light doesn't mean F-bombs and, you know, using curse words or the way that we characterize or we do that. And sadly, I think we've seen quite a bit of that. I'm concerned on the Anon world, which I mean, I have a lot of people that I respect that are Anon. And the ones that I know that their actual online Anon persona matches their offline persona. They may say things a little bolder, but they're still, you know, they're not speaking in an unChrist-like way, which is, I'm concerned that they're doing that. Anyways, you're back.
Yeah, I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, that was really weird.
I think an EMT or something's gone off in your area, dude, and you've lost all your internet access.
I don't know. I had some issues with my computer last week, and I mentioned it on the podcast. And of course, all these computer guys were like, "Oh, I can help you find a new one," but I didn't have any problems to this extent. So, yeah, maybe the Anons have found me, but I don't think they'll find my phone. So, this should work. I heard what you said as you were talking. I was backstage. I had to log back into the computer to let my phone in.
Yeah.
So, now that I'm back, I think you make a good point about like a right and a wrong use to use an Anons.
Yeah.
Because there does seem to be, and I don't know what the percentage is, but it seems like more Anons than I'm comfortable with tend to operate without impunity. And they use that license as an opportunity to tear down people that they don't like, and maybe even in sinful ways, say, like you said, profanity, but also just air. I mean, there's a term that I won't say, but it, you know, basically crap posting, right? They just want to use it as a journal to put yeah. all their complaints about the world. And then you find community with others, maybe even in chat groups that you get invited to, people who share your gripes, share your concerns, but it becomes a complain fest. And I've seen this dynamic, and it just discourages people. It's not a prudent thing. I don't know, maybe talk about that a little bit, because I am worried for guys who find their quote unquote encouragement online, but that's the encouragement is what I just described.
Now, I'm making a big assumption here, but I genuinely think that I know all of the Anons that are in our church, and our church is roughly, you know, 320 or so people. And, you know, I know quite a few of them that have Anon accounts. And then there's a lot that have just regular accounts. So assuming that I know everybody in there, I have heard directly from them as they are part of Signal chats and different, you know, offline, you know, but it's still, there's a community that's developed where they're maintaining those that they're discouraged by the way people speak. Cause that's even rougher than what's happening online. Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that's what I'm yeah. seeing. What's yeah. discouraging, so you get somebody online, you post something, anything goes viral, you get, you know, you'll get, you know 100 retweets of something. It happens every once in a while, and then that's when they show up in mass, and then the things they say, and then you click on their profile to go, who is this dude? And it's like Christ is King, you know, Boniface, you know, this or that, and you're like, wait a minute, you just said this in my comments. And I'm like, some inconsistencies here.
Yeah, the thing about it, and this is kind of an odd thing, because we haven't had a situation like this in world history that I can think of. There's not a parallel to it. Obviously, there's espionage, right? Which is, it's kind of like, that would be the parallel to why use an Anon account for a good reason is yeah. spying, espionage. I mean, these are legitimate pursuits in the right context. But not everyone's a spy, right? Everyone might want to be, but not everyone's a spy. And to have just the social life itself, like the public square, be yeah. swarmed with people that you don't know, that you can't get to know. You have no connection. You don't know what they're connected to. You don't know how they're managing their household. You don't know really a thing. They could be from another country. They could be a different gender than they're portraying.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's ever really happened. The closest thing I can think of is in France, those masquerade, you know, parties where you show, but people kind of still know who the people
are. Well, you know if you're male or female, for hopefully, you know,
by looking. Right, yeah, you know at least that. This is less than that. And that's one of the things I've wondered is what's the social effect on a broad scale of this when you have so many people operating anonymously? You can't get to know them that way, really. It's very hard to, at least. There's so many barriers there, but they can say whatever they want. And so it's in an environment like that, if you're trying to find your people, quote unquote, it's not going to be based on shared interests or shared region or any of the tangible things that actually bind us together.
No,
it's going to be, we have the same complaints or something like that. That's at least what I'm seeing, is people sort of fall into these categories of they have similar political views, but even more than that, they have a similar rambunctious attitude perhaps.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I think I'm seeing, that I'm like, you know, I'm for anonymity, allowing it because of the first reason you said, like the Federalist Papers, and those guys use anonymous pseudonyms, but for a good purpose. And so what do you do as you're a pastor? What do you do, since you know guys in your church who are also have anon accounts, if you start seeing someone go in this direction, how do you identify it? How do you help shepherd someone through that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm cautious. I don't want to become that guy that's overly looking over their shoulder. I have had very specific situations where people have said certain things, and I go to them and I'll screenshot it and I'll send it to them. I'm like, what was that? And then they'll take it down. I've had that happen multiple times. We've got three anons right now that are taking a break. They're not on. And I think that's helpful for them. And maybe that's generated by me and Tanner and others, as we've encouraged people to have a consistent, you know, here's the thing. We want to build, and we're pushing the idea of building and building your family and building your work and being a pillar in the church and having an influence in your local community and stuff. So these are the big pushes that we're having. Well, that's not really accomplished online. There's no real community. It's all faux. It's not real. And it can go away in a moment. You say the wrong thing in some of these groups, and suddenly the attention's against you. And so my challenge to them has just to be build real things. Actually work on your marriage. Actually work on this, work on that, you know. Get out of the company. Let's take your skill set and let's turn that into a business. So we're very pro entrepreneurial, you know, here. And so I'm going to encourage real things that they can have pride in. And then it's truly who they are, and not something that, having pride in the fact that you've got 10,000 followers on Twitter is just so, it's vapor.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
I know. Yeah. And I think there's a temptation to think that we memed ourselves into the White House, right? That I hear that so much. We memed ourselves into the White House. So
we did it.
We're the ones that are producing real change by, before it was the left bullying and canceling people. And now we get to use this tool to get our guys into spots that are advantageous and to rip down those that we don't like. And I'm a little suspicious of that. Skeptical that that's actually accomplishing a lot. Like you can't deny the fact that Elon Musk buying Twitter helped President Donald Trump. Whether it gave him the election, I don't know, but it certainly helped him, right?
Yeah.
But I think of especially a young guy who's starting out, who let's say doesn't have a long record on social media of his views. And he decides he's going to do an Anon account and then just really air everything. If that gets doxxed, which that happens at times, then he may be disqualified at a lower stage from ever wielding actual power to love neighbor and to.
Yeah.
But if he channels that effort into something like building a business, like you said, or running for local office, or I don't know, something productive in the real world, it seems to me like that's usually more prudent. And you know, I don't know. I mean, even with the in the Christian, quote unquote, nationalist circles, you know, how many guys have run for office? It's something I've been thinking about lately, because, you know, we have like Dusty Devers, but he's the name that always comes up. It's like, oh, we got Dusty Devers. But like, oh, my God, that's great. I love Dusty Devers. You know, Dusty Devers was a businessman in his community and people knew him. That's how he got the position he was in. Mm-hmm. And that's I'm convicted of this myself, getting involved in local community, local church. It just seems that's the if a non-account can serve that, which is how you're using it, my non-account serves my local involvement, yep. It can be good. But if it's not serving that, then you have to question, okay, what's the purpose then of using it?
Yep.
So one of the things, I got a comment from someone who said that they don't think pastors should have non-accounts, and implied that this was for more immature people, that if you have authority, you shouldn't have an account. And I countered back. I said, and I'd be curious what you think of this, Pastor Doris. I said, actually, I think pastors and people who are more mature, let's say, are probably the prime people who should have an Anon account. Like, I would trust them more with that tool, because it's a powerful tool. You can ambush than someone who doesn't have wisdom, right? So it actually takes more wisdom, I think, to operate one of those accounts, not less. I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, we would say that until last week with Josh Blythe.
Well, it was up. I know. That's kind of why we're having this conversation.
I can see that. But what are they afraid of? Why not have their real account and be who they really are as a pastor? Would be my pushback to that. Unless when you were offline here, I mentioned it, so I'm not sure you heard it, but if you're afraid of your congregation, like your congregation is going to know your actual true views and you're concerned about that, I could see that for sure. But our lives should match our words. And the more that our lives and everybody can look and verify that you're who you are, it lands with such greater FUD. You know what I mean? It's just, it has so much more impact. If it's truly you, if it's just some Anon who's got, you know, just a few followers and you follow 1,000 people and, you know, who cares what he says?
Yeah.
But it means something if I say something because of my position and my place in the community and people know me. So if I say, hey, this is wrong or this is right or this is good, now people listen, and really it emboldens the congregation. And so I can see a context where you need to do it, but I would argue maybe really evaluate the reason why you would want that as a pastor, because I think you're going to have greater impact with your voice. Your voice is going to be louder if it's you saying something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think of all the Proverbs about a good name and how prized that is.
Yeah.
You can't really build a good name if you're not using your name, right?
Right.
You're building an avatar or a profile or some kind of brand. But there is a difference between that and then having a good name that actually your kids get to inherit and your church gets to benefit from. And those kinds of things. So pour your energy into to that, to real tangible things like that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I know in my context, we get this on the regular here, just from Snake on the Table, our Twitter accounts and stuff like that. When I say something, I remember when I'm reminded by my congregation, when they say, hey, you said this and that was really important to me. It emboldens my church. It equips them. They now know how to deal or handle or talk about a particular topic that they hadn't thought about before. And so that's why I like that I can do that. If a pastor's out there, his congregation doesn't know who he is and that he's done this. And so he's not having that outside of the pulpit impact that he should be having on his congregation.
Right. No, that's a really, really good point. And I hadn't thought of that before we started the podcast. I want to get to some questions. So if those who are listening, I know we have a bunch of people streaming. If you have questions or comments on any of this, please put it in the channel and I will get to them. There's not a lot yet, but I wanted to maybe shift the conversation a little bit to just online ethics and how we interact online in general, whether Anon or not. So this, one of the things that I've realized just being in the podcast world is there is this unspoken code of how I should I guess, carry myself. If someone's a guest on my podcast, for example, it is kind of like they're a guest in my home, and I am expected to treat them a certain way, give them some deference, let them talk, hear their thoughts. And this is something that's developed over time, obviously, as the online world has existed. But I think we're still in development, and scripture obviously has to apply to this, though. So I don't know if you have thoughts on, you know, what are some of the things, I mean, maybe some of the pitfalls too, that people get into operating online that, that maybe we wouldn't tolerate it in, you know, like if you met someone at church or met someone in the community or met someone at a conference, you should you treat them the same or different as opposed to meeting them in the comment thread, that kind of thing?
I think we're definitely more aggressive online, and especially when we don't know people, there's just a natural aggression that comes up. And then that's only exacerbated by anonymity. But we as Christians are always to have, you know, our speech is always to be graceful. It's always to be edifying. That doesn't mean that we aren't salty and we say things that are pointed and they, you know, they get to the point, you know, and they're upsetting, the things that we say, but the words that we're choosing to say, we're not, we're just making sure that they're graceful. I think about, I know, and he's old and stuff like that, but like Joel Beakey, how is he gonna interact with somebody who's being, you know, just salty or whatever? You know, he's still going to be gracious with him in his response. I have, if you follow my social media from, you know, I think I opened a Facebook account in 2008 or something like that. That's when I had one. You know, if you follow that, I've tried to be gracious, but there's definitely been, you know, times that you get into it with people and you go farther than you should. And so I think owning that, having a transparency, that's something that I wanted to do. And maybe this is what you get. I'll give you one big one. This may be real, really, salty for your crowd here. I don't know who follows this, but I don't engage with women online. I just have stopped this. It doesn't matter who they are. It's a no-win situation for me to go at it with somebody. Now, if I know the person, like there, if it's a lady in my congregation, then I will answer those things. But if it's somebody I don't know, I don't engage in that, because even if they ask me a question, and it's not the, like the Mike Pence thing or anything, it's just a no-win situation. If you argue with a woman online, either you're beating her or you're being beat by her. And that's a no-win situation.
Right. Yeah. Both are bad. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard other guys, I think AD Robles does that too, if I'm not mistaken. He just won't engage with females. And I think there's different, obviously different online platforms that people conceive of differently. So Twitter, some people think, is a war zone. So you're supposed to go in there with a battle hardened attitude, but it seems silly to me a little bit. I mean, I've had guys argue this, because, you know, usually the appeal is, look what Jesus did in the temple. Look how Jesus talked to the Pharisees. And I recognize that, but I'm thinking like, brother, you don't really do that though in real life. That's the thing. Like sometimes, you know, you're timid. You're not trying to, you know, cultivate a situation that would allow you to take leadership in your church or that kind of thing and get into positions where you can be authoritative and speak in those ways. And maybe that's the difference. I don't want to sound like, I mean, I guess maybe I'm getting older now, but I'm not, you know, I'm a middle-aged guy. I'm younger middle-aged. I'm not pining for the good old days before the internet. I actually think the internet can be a good tool. I'm just saying that there does seem to be some social restrictions. You just don't do certain things. You don't air all the things that you think of when you're in public. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that actually helps you have self-control to have that social pressure on you. You know, when you are in a social setting and you don't conceive of it as a war zone, you actually do look at it as a social setting. Tend to operate with more respect. But if you think as soon as you log in, it's a war zone and you don't have to jump through any of the normal hoops that it would take to be a general, you can play a general, right? And that's I guess maybe the other thing that I'm sensing it. I don't know how to articulate it well, but that these social mores and the hierarchies and ranks in society are somewhat broken down when you go online. And I don't know that that's a good thing either.
Yeah.
So
you can quote tweet there or go directly at the Pope right now.
Yeah.
He's got a Twitter account, and what amazing access that you have. I think Twitter, well, X, it has a, the combativeness of that, it rewards spice. The spicier you are, it just, you'll get the likes, you'll get it. If you just put something up like a scripture quote or something like that, or some insight from the Word of God that you've gotten from, you know, your studies, and it's beneficial, you know, that is going to get no responses.
Right.
It doesn't do that. But if you do the exact same post and you put it on Facebook, you'll get all the likes and the hearts and the conversations.
That's true.
It's just, it rewards. So Facebook rewards intuition and thoughtfulness and meaning. And Twitter, X, I keep saying Twitter, X, it rewards combat. It does. So that's why, I guess that's why it feels more warrior when you go into it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I look at conversations on there and I think, man, if we didn't have these online barriers, would we be shooting guns at each other? Would this be an actual war? I mean, it feels like that. But I do want to get to some questions and comments. So I'm going to just check out what we got here. Not a Calvinist. Okay, well, we have someone who's not a Calvinist. They want people to know this. It says, and they think this is an Anon. This has been a needed as an honest, useful, and oftentimes convicting talk concerning the issue of Anons on X. So thank you, Not a Calvinist. I really appreciate that. And I think, I mean, there's so much more I think we could say, and maybe we will, but I think we're just scratching the surface. This is such a needed conversation, but one that is in development. Bob from Canada. So we got Bob. You got a lot of Anons on the account today. Your real name means nothing to those 1,000 miles away on the internet. Judge based on substance. I'd advise my kids to be Anon if they ever go online. Oh, that's an interesting. Yeah, maybe you talked about this when I was logged off or whatever. But when it comes to children operating online for the protection of children, you know, maybe that, I don't know. I tend to think that I wouldn't want my kids online at all if they have to use an Anon.
No,
that's just my gut, but. Maybe that protects them.
Yeah, I mentioned this a couple of times, and this maybe gets into a totally different topic, but I find that as a man, the imagery and the stuff that it gets on the For You there that it gives you, that's where most of my sensuality is you know, provoked in there. So I've recently got into my settings and I've turned off all photos. I don't see any photos. So I will click, if you post something, I'll see that there's it'll have a tag that there's a photo there and I know it's you. So I'm going to click it and see what you post, you know, what you have there, just immediately pops up. But I don't think kids should be on X because of that. It's just, there's too much. I don't think they have, you know, it depends on who they are, but most of the kids that I know don't have the ability to be on there. So I wouldn't have them on there. I guess he's concerned about the predators going after them. Is that?
I'm assuming. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I get that.
That's interesting. You because it's gotten better on X, but it does seem like every once in a while, I still come across like semi-pornographic material, if not pornographic. And it's a difficult thing to maneuver. We have this world, and I mean, a lot of parents I see give their kids cell phones because they think, well, I want to know where you are. I want you to be able to call me at very young ages. Yeah. And you're giving them, though, something that obviously they can take and then use for all kinds of sinful activities, including including that. Let's see what other comments we have. Alex Berry says he literally just blocks all women. So you just, well, that's one way to do it, I guess. Block all women. So if you see
some of them are worse, especially on X, they're really bad. Especially the reform trolls, the ones that troll the reformed world, they're really bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sort of in
that. I don't know what it is, you know.
Yeah.
I watch him go after Webb, and there's some people that some ladies are just obsessed after Joel Webb, and I'm like,
oh my gosh.
And then I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's like they make it their personal job to go after them, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's convicting maybe when someone says that you're in sin, and they just want to get one up on you. I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, Jerry Doris did not say to do that, but if that's what you need to do, block all women. Okay. Let's see. Bob again says, I pretty much only troll the Theo bros. So, because the bad idea is being promoted from Moscow, was detrimental to our local church. So, you know, Bob, I don't know who you are, but I would just say you might want to let that go. I'm just saying. I don't know all the particular circumstances of what happened to your church. Maybe it's a bad story, but yeah. There's no way to get back at people, really. Whatever happened to your church, let's just assume it was really bad. Going online and using an Anon to go after it. Like I'll give you an example. If there was a story, let's say someone, we'll take it out of the realm of Moscow. Yeah. Let's just say another group or whatever, some hypothetical. Some group goes after you and they're a threat. They're a threat to other churches because they've done something to your church. The best thing you can do is probably put a little meat on the bones and let people know exactly what happened so that they know what to watch out for. Mm-hmm. If you are a nameless, faceless person without much of a following, likely because you're Anon, it may feel good to post about those things and to go after them. But how many people can actually benefit from the experience you had? They can't even verify the experience. They don't know where it happened. So I guess that's a point I want. I'm not telling you, Bob, to go after anyone, but I'm just saying if you use an Anon, that's I don't know that it helps that much. Just my two cents. Well, I'll wait for some more questions to get in here. Maybe we can keep talking just a little bit about. Okay, Bob disagrees. He says his testimony is posted on the channel. Okay, I haven't seen it, so I'd have to see it. Maybe we can talk a little bit about online etiquette a little bit more too. So treating people the way that you want to be treated, using respectful language, even online, I think it does make you stand out as someone. Well, you said the Reformed people are trolling and so forth, but I think hopefully as a Christian, our speech is peppered with salt.
Yeah.
Or seasoned with salt. And so that is one of the things that I've tried to, maybe I'm not perfect at it, but I've tried to implement is if I wouldn't say it to the person's face, I'm right. not going to say it online.
Right.
And that means I got to be brave in person too. That forces me to be brave in person or just to not say it at all. Maybe it's something not worth saying. Right. That's one of the rules that I know I've tried to live by. Another one is making any kind of jokes, really. Jokes are harder online. So this is another thing that I'm not the best at this either, but it is a dynamic I've tried to factor into my own online activity. Because you don't see someone's facial expression and you don't hear their tone of their voice, something you write can be taken 10 different ways. And I have to try to, if I can, assume the 10 ways they can be taken and then make my communication as clear as I can, which is difficult when you talk as much as I do online. But that's another rule that I've tried to implement is assuming before I post, how can this be taken wrong? And sometimes you can't help it. People are just going to take you out of context and all that. But at least attempting, and humor's very difficult. So I don't know how many times I've had a joke or something that I thought was funny, and I just click delete. It happens probably once every 2 or 3 days. Like, I just, you know what? I just don't, in person, this might be funny. It might make sense, but online, someone might take it wrong, right?
Yeah.
Are there any other things like that, rules that you use to govern your online activity?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm conscientious about those kind of things. I recognize I want to be pastoral. I don't want to say anything that's going to kind of ruin my, you know, I'm cautious. I'll often sit on a tweet or some post. On my iPhone, I use the notes thing and I'll just post it there. I'm also a stickler. I want it to be perfect. I don't want to have a typo. So I'm really, you know, really careful about that. One of the things I'll do, because I have Tanner, but Tanner's probably not the best person to throw stuff to, because he's like, yeah, do it. Everything you think to do, he's like, yeah, go, bombs away. But we do have a group called Twits and Tweets that Tanner and a few other guys that if I named them, you know who they were, that I'll post something. I'll say, hey, I'm thinking about this. What do you guys think about this? Or I got this situation. Should I respond to this? And you know, they'll tell me, no, yeah, let that one go. Let this. And so that's been helpful to have just a governor, I guess, or a little group to do that. Sometimes it's quick and it's fast and it's not, you know, I don't have time to think about that. And usually when I do this, I have some sort of a typo, but I'm just driven by this idea of let your speech always be with grace. I want that. And I fail at that at times. This is really coming true. Even just in the last 2 days, I can't keep people from slandering me. I can't keep people from misunderstanding me or maliciously taking something that I've said and tweeting it out or, you know, we just did a podcast. I'll give you an example fresh today where we were in the Hall of Fire and there was a few men that were smoking pipes in there. I wasn't, I do smoke a pipe, but we were in there and in this video. And one of the guys, so somebody had screenshot that and then had quoted me. And the quote was, you know, smoking a pipe is not masculine. You know, I know my wife doesn't smoke a pipe. I know some of your wives smoke cigars. It was a joke. Well, they took that and they made that into a big deal, you know, and I can't help people from taking, you know, doing right. Stuff like this. Like, I don't know. You're right. Humor, those things are, you got to be really cautious about that. But
and there's certain things you can say in mixed company or not mixed company. You can't say in mixed company.
Yeah.
And when you're online in a public forum, you always have to assume it's mixed company.
Yeah.
You can't just
assume. I didn't even mean that in any kind of a bad way. I mean, it was a joke.
Right.
Their wife smoking, you know, not anything other than that. So.
No, I understand. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. I guess I'm saying amen, yes and amen, and also you don't know who's watching, I guess, and you have to assume that anyone can watch what you're saying, and that's a hard thing because you think you're in your little corner of the internet
with
your buddies and it's like you're hanging out together and no one's watching, but they are, or they could be. And so you have to be aware online. Maybe that's an added incentive for guys to get together.
You've got to have a thick skin to be online, I think, and whenever you put your opinion out, if you're just a lurker and you're following and that kind of stuff, but if you're actually putting out opinions, you better have a thick skin because you're going to get, you know, people are going to take you out of context. If they know who you are, they're going to take you out of context. And maybe this is one of the reasons to be anon is who cares if somebody takes you out of context? Well, it matters for me because if they screenshot that and they put it in a local group and all of a sudden I've got, and this has happened, I've had people, members of our church come up and say, hey, what about this? I'm like, oh, that's not what I said. Here's what actually happened. Well, right. If they hadn't come to me, I wouldn't have known. If they had received slander and let that fester, then that hardens them. So it can affect other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it helps your character too, having to own everything you say, because on judgment day, God's not going to care if you have an anon. He knows.
No, he knows every tweet and who I was.
Yeah. You're not fooling him. So a fear of God, I think, is maybe at the base of a lot of this.
Yeah.
Veritax says, just because someone replies to a social media message doesn't mean you have to reply either. Sometimes it's obvious the other person is not capable of understanding your point of view and understanding, or is unwilling to do anything but waste your time.
100%. I agree.
I'm a failure at this. This is the worst. I totally agree. And I have a lot of,
you still respond.
I have my inbox full. Someone yesterday, and I realized we're online, so I'm going to take my own rule that I said and be delicate about this, but someone wanted marriage advice and it was of a delicate nature, we'll say. And even that, like, I felt that burden to, oh, this poor guy, I should get involved. And I don't have time for it. I'm not the guy's pastor. So I told him that. I said, you need to honestly, if you don't have a pastor, you need to find a pastor. I can't be your pastor.
Yeah.
But my heart does go out and I want to correct things and help people, and or these are all noble things, but you were amending it more than I was. So maybe expand on that. Why do you think that's such a good point?
Well, I mean, first off, people say stupid things constantly and or misunderstand you or willfully misunderstand you or try to say something. One, if it's blown up, Tanner just had one. It was like 6.3 million views for a for an X post. And there's just no way. I mean, you can pick and choose. So the Holy Nope goes to our church as well, Austin Keeler. And mm-hmm. Austin has this same thing. We've talked a lot about this, is especially when something blows up, you know, so every post he puts out there, there are literally thousands of comments on, if you multiply all the platforms that he's on. I think on, it's like on TikTok, he's like 600,000 followers or something like that.
Wow.
There's just no way. There's just no way to respond to that. Now, in my little world, you know, and I put something out there and I get, you know, whatever it is, and, you know, people respond. I've just to stop. I purposely just, it's peace for my soul. One, I don't have time. Mm-hmm. I just don't have time to respond to everybody.
Yeah. So
what he said is absolutely right. It's just a big help for me. I often will just like, oh, okay, and put it away, even though it's gnawing at me.
Yeah. In seminary, this was one of the things that my professors sometimes were very optimistic about, was look at all the ministry we can do now using the internet. It just expands the reach and the potential. And I'm now very skeptical of this. I don't know that it, I think you can do good things online. I'm not saying you can't, but man, it's so easy for someone to send you a message about their problems and want counsel.
Yeah.
And normally the people who are going to change are the ones who are going to actually come to the office or make the appointment and have some stake in the game.
Yeah.
So, Veritex also followed up, said, the other thing is, even if you think you are doing good by contending for the faith, how much energy are you putting into it? Ever spend time on social media and look up and 3 to 4 hours are gone? Yeah.
Never happens.
Never happens. this is, I mean, we don't have to get into the specific issue here, perhaps, but it could be any issue. Not a Calvinist says, it's been heartbreaking, disturbing, and surprising the trend of almost normalizing a foul narrative on race, Hitler sympathizing and hatred with many Anons on X. How did we get here? And maybe I'll reframe the question just a little bit. It does seem like there's a shock value online that can desensitize your conscience. I've noticed this myself. So more extreme ideas, or maybe extreme's not the best word, just shocking thing, shock jock type activity that is very much rewarded online.
Yeah, and
that's going to come across your screen. That's what everyone wants to see, is the more shocking, the more edgy, the more you're going to see it. And that desensitizes you and makes you, I think for me, it is probably in ways I don't realize, changed maybe the way I think about things and maybe even my own speech. It normalizes things that were not normalized before. And that changes the boundaries of social acceptability. And I know the guys doing it, some of them, that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
But is that good for us to constantly be exposing our minds to the most edgy and sensational topics and videos and things? Probably not. That's probably not a good thing. So anything you want to add to that?
Well, I mean, just on the topics that she mentioned, some of those things are really pertinent for us to talk about. I know it's uncomfortable to talk about those things. I haven't delved into the Hitler side of it, but we even just did an episode today on the issue of race. And it's important, especially, you know, post 1965 and how the world has been conceived and white male. We've been under attack for decades now, and we feel guilty for being who we are and those kind of things. And so that's actually it's a relevant topic, and it's one reason it's so popular is because it resonates with so many men. And so, and honestly, a lot of the men that are on Twitter are going to be in this category. And so that's why I think that's a popular thing. I think the other thing that's questioning the Holocaust and all that kind of nonsense, you know, that's, that goes along with it. Anyways, that's all I say.
There's kind of a spectrum there, I think, is what I hear you saying. Because there's a legitimate, that's been my platform since 2019 or whatever, kicking back against the woke stuff. there's discussions you do need to have. If they're happening online, at least they're happening somewhere, and hopefully the more prudent voices will be heard by the people that need to hear them. But that's the thing. There's no reward system online that will elevate the more prudent voices. Generally, it is usually the flamethrowers who want to take advantage of these serious topics that need to be discussed, and do so in ways that just rage bait and, you know, that kind of thing.
I'll plug your book for you. But we purchased, we purchased 15 copies of your book. And so last night we, you know, as we go through your book, we've stalled on chapter 5, but just because there's so much in that particular chapter, I thought it was pretty helpful. But after we were done talking, so we're talking about these things, we're talking about nationality and race and these kind of things, but it's an open conversation. And after it was over, one of the young men, this is like the second time he's come, he just said, "That was so awesome to be able to actually talk about this." We don't ever talk about it. Nobody talks about this, or I can't talk about these things. And I think that real connection actually builds real bonds and real community and real trust. And then he's in the military. He just got in there. So he was talking with an older gentleman who is in the military as well. And they were just comparing notes, and he was getting counsel in that group. I'm like, man, this is so awesome. And it was because of your book that we're gathering together.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Hey, can we see a copy of your book?
yeah. There it is. Yeah, and all credit goes to the person who designed the cover, Jerry Doris.
That is a fantastic design.
No, in all seriousness, for those listening, Jerry Pastor Doris did help design that and format it and everything. I don't know how you work, but you were much quicker than I thought you were going to be. So you just, I get the impression you do. You put in like a 15-hour day and just crank out.
Yeah, I'm productive. I'm a productive guy. But I warned you, I don't read the books that I work on until I read them afterwards. You assumed I read your book.
I know. I thought so. I'm like, he went and formatted every page. He must have somehow digested it. So, you know, I'm actually thinking of doing a Sunday school or something at my church regarding the book, so that I can put out maybe a study guide for people. Not that you need it. I mean, what are you guys doing? Just asking questions that.
Yeah, we just walk through a recent, whatever you've highlighted, we'll stop and we'll talk about the content of it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all.
Yeah.
It's either, I've done it, a couple other guys have just kind of walked through with us.
Yeah, it's really good that you're actually doing that. I don't know a lot of people. There's another church I know that I think is about to start using the book for that purpose. And even just sitting down with guys and talking about things that are controversial, like race. I mean, these are things that you do have to navigate. The Bible does have things to say on it. And if they don't come to you, if you're not having those conversations, where are they going to go?
Yeah.
They will go online, and who knows what they're going to find there. So
I will tell you this is that, so we, this group that we meet with on Monday nights, we have sermon session beforehand. So where they chop up whoever preached. So that's usually my sermon. They're chopping up. And then we go through how to form propositions and all that stuff. So we're teaching people how to look at the text, and then we move to the book. But we've been doing Herman Bobbing's Reformed Dogmatics. So we're in chapter 2. And so we decided to do something, some light reading, and that was your book. So
I'm
friends you at all, but no. Bobbing and Harris are just
I'm a dum-dum compared to Bobbing. So
we all are too. Looking at him like,
Well, I know after I read anything from the 19th century or, even the 20th, early 20th century, that wasn't that long ago, but I feel dumb. Just the normal course. And then that's another thing about online stuff too. And I don't know that we can stop it, but the language of devolves, I should say, so quickly in online discourse. You can pick up the slang 1 week and it's changed the next week. Mm-hmm. And you might still be saying based. And now I've been told that that's old people say based.
Imagine being 55 and trying to keep up.
I know.
It doesn't happen.
You shouldn't even try. Yeah. Keyed is the thing now. Maybe that's old now, but yeah, you get keyed into things. I'm like, keyed? Okay, keyed.
Okay.
All right, that's the word. But W.T. Henry makes a good point. He says, "I think people get triggered online when they don't have a solid worldview. Any challenge to those people's worldview upsets the apple cart." That could be. I think, that could be. And online isn't, on social media comment threads, it is probably not the best place to build a worldview. or a philosophy of life. It's better to have some, obviously the Bible, but also solid Christian books so you can
just read, people.
Read.
Read.
Yep.
Listen to books. Tanner, because of his job, I mean, he literally logs thousands of hours and he can just listen because he's just hammering and moving posts and stuff. It's a good book for thing. I walk in the morning and I listen to books. That's how I push through books more than any other time. That's just when I do it. But I would encourage people to read.
That's a good use of technology. Yeah. Well, we've been going over 50 minutes. So unless anyone has any questions, I think we can maybe summarize this. And are there any resources you want to push anyone toward that would help them more on this, Pastor Doris?
No, I can't think of it. Well,
where can people go to find, you know, your sermons or since you do publishing, your books that you put out there?
Yeah, so I give you a couple of links here. First off, our podcast that Tanner and I do is snakeonthetable.com. And so you can go there and then you can find us on YouTube, just searching Snake on the Table. And then that's on all the different platforms. Our church is refchurch.com, which stands for reformationchurch.com. And there I blog there. I also have a Substack that I've started to this year where I'm starting to put some more articles out, writing a little bit more. So those are where people can find me.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Well, this was a really good discussion. I think it's going to help a lot of people and I appreciate you trucking on even when I was having demons in my computer that have not made their way to my phone. Thank God.
Yeah.
But, I appreciate that. And I would advise people who are listening, who have more questions, check out those resources. They're really good. I was on the famous Snake on the Table podcast just 2 months ago, I think, something like that. So go check that out. And God bless everyone.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.